Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopichana Balabha Giravarid Hari. Gopi Janna Balabha Giravarid Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi. Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Padraja, Kacharya, Sukhira, Sada, Shri, Shimnis, Divine Grace, Asi, Bhakti, Vedanta, Swami, Maharaj, Shri, Prabhupada, Kujai. Srimad, Bhagavatam, Kujai. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Guranga. Amaum Vishnupadaya, Krishna, Sada, Kujai, Srimati, Bhakti, Vedanta, Swami, Nithina, Mani, Mani, Sada, Sada, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Adura's Talks with Maitreya, Text 48. Okay. Tate vayam loka shish... Excuse me. Tate vayam loka shishrik shayadya. Tvayanu shrishtas tribiratma bhisma. Sarve viyukta sva vihara tantram. Nashaknumastat pratihartavete. Tate vayam loka shishrikshayadya. Tvayani shistas tribiratma bhisma. Sarve viyukta sva vihara tantram. Nashaknumastat pratihartavete. Others? Thank you. Tevayam loka shishriksaya vya. Matajis, Vaishnavas. Thank you. Word for word, tut. Therefore. Te. Your. Vayam. All of us. Loka. World. Sisrikshaya. For the sake of creation. Adya. O original person. Twaya. By you. Anushrita. Being created one after another. Tribi, by the three modes of nature. Atmabi, by one's own. Sma, in the past. Sarve, all. Viyukta, separated. Svavihara tantram, the network of activities for one's own pleasure. Na, not. Shaknuma, could do it. Tat, that. Pratihartave, to award. Te, unto your. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O original person, we are therefore but yours only. Although we are your creatures, we are born one after another under the influence of the three modes of nature. And for this reason, we are separated in action. Therefore, after the creation, we cannot act concertedly for your transcendental pleasure. Report. The cosmic creation is working under the influence of the three modes of the external potency of the Lord. Different creatures are also under the same influence, and therefore they cannot act concertedly in satisfying the Lord. Because of this diverse activity, there cannot be any harmony in the material world. The best policy, therefore, is to act for the sake of the Lord. That will bring about the desired harmony. Om Jnana Tanrandisha Gananjana Salakara Chaksarumi Tamina Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Vanchakalpa Tirgascha Kribasindhi Devacha Patitana Pavanebhyo Vaishnava Namaha. So this verse might be a little difficult to understand without the greater context of where we're at. We go back about 10 verses to verse 38. We heard this is when the demigods are introduced. The controlling deities were produced. They come into being. And it says, because they were entrusted with different functions of universal duties and were unable to perform them, they offered fascinating prayers to the Lord as follows. So at this point, the whole creation isn't complete, right? In other words, the gross elements and, you know, the very sort of the basic building blocks are there, but it hasn't really been put into its full fruition because the different elements are not all there. And so we have different demigods. Say, let's say, okay, Varuna is in charge of the water. Well, water is there, sort of the gross element water, but we don't have bodies of water yet created and laid aside, as far as I can understand. So they don't know quite exactly what to do, and because they're all in the different modes of nature, as we're hearing today, it's hard for them to work cooperatively. So because they're a little bewildered in what is their duty and how to execute it, they offer these very, very nice prayers to the Supreme Lord, which we've just heard. So we've just completed their prayers, where they show that they are indeed devotees and they wish to serve Krishna, but they're not exactly quite sure how to do it. So then here today, we are hearing their surrender to Krishna. They say, we are yours only, but because we're all in different modes of nature, it's hard for us to work together cooperatively. So this is kind of where we're at. They can't carry out their service until Krishna is actually, which this will all happen in the next chapter, Krishna enters into the material world along with Kali, who gets the material nature, which it gets things going, and that sets all the material elements in motion. So they're kind of in this in-between period where it's hard for them to do much service, and they're saying, what can we do? So they couldn't work cooperatively, it's mentioned, because they are controlled by the modes of nature. Now, these are demigods, they're obviously devotees, we've just seen from their nice prayers, so everyone is really controlled by the modes of nature. And because of that control of modes of nature, what do we see in the material world? We see dissension, disharmony, we see fighting, wars, so many things happen due to the modes, particularly of passion and ignorance. So even the demigods could not serve properly without the hand of Krishna. So without Krishna there, what can we do? Everything becomes disjointed, everything is disharmonious, people are not working together, there's not cooperation in the world. So Prabhupada concludes, the best policy, therefore, is to act for the sake of the Lord. That will bring about the desired harmony. So, if we want harmony and we want peace in the world, there has to be mutual cooperation, and that cooperation must be centered around Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, it's futile, and there will never be any real harmony. And this is what Krishna wants. He wants his devotees to be working together in harmony. I was trying to think of an example of this. I mean, of course, it's hard to always understand the mind of Krishna, but, you know, many times our acharyas give examples in the material world to help us understand spiritual concepts. So think about a parent. And a parent has two or three children, and when the children are fighting, it's not very pleasant, is it? Any of you are parents, or any of you even have siblings, it's not really very pleasant when there's a lot of quarreling and squabbling. This doesn't really please anybody. It doesn't please the siblings, and it doesn't please the parents. Now, that might be mildly annoying, but then you take it another step further. What if the children are really, really in great disagreement, where they just won't even speak with each other? Say they've grown up, and they get in some kind of fight, and they don't talk to each other, they don't visit. The parent would be very distressed, right? This is very distressing to a parent, you know? Because they want to see them getting along and relating and having a loving relationship. So it's like that with Krishna in some ways. He doesn't like to see his devotees fighting and quarreling and being in disagreement. And it certainly interferes with devotional service. It's certainly going to interfere with them being able to, in a very good, loving heart, be able to offer service to the Lord if they're just fighting with all the other devotees of the Lord. So that's not a good thing. And similarly, the spiritual master wants us to work in harmony, wants his disciples to work harmoniously together to serve him, to serve his mission. Now, it's interesting because Srila Prabhupada emphasized this idea of cooperation in devotees continuously. It wasn't something he said once or twice, it's something he said very, very often. Like, I found a file, I didn't realize, I remember I had it, it's a file of quotes, it's about 12 pages in tiny type. So there's at least 100 different letters to devotees and so, and also some different purports, the verses in there. And I think someone must have done a search on the word cooperation. Because all of these have to do with cooperation between, not cooperation with Krishna necessarily, but cooperation amongst the devotees. And you can see from many of the letters, I'm not going to read ones that are personal, you know, where it's like this person's fighting with this one, but that was going on a lot. And Prabhupada didn't usually solve the problem He didn't usually say, well, you're right, you're wrong. Once in a while he had to, but he would usually do that privately if he had to correct one of the particular disciples. Usually what he'd say is try to work together. For instance, I'll just read a couple of these because I think they're very instructive. This is a letter to Tribhuvanath, 1971. I'm also glad to note a meeting of the presidents was held just recently in order to unify the temples. That is the process. Unless we work cooperatively, how can this movement go on? My request to all of you is you maintain the spirit of cooperation always and help me deliver Lord Chaitanya's message all over the globe. So here we see Srila Prabhupada is cooperating with the mission of Lord Chaitanya. He wants his disciples to cooperate together to help his mission. Nice one from Vista Yogeshwara in 71 also. You write to describe me as a loving servant of the Lord. If you believe me so, then kindly help me in my service. That will help both of us. I want your cooperation fully. Lord Chaitanya, although Krishna himself, appealed to his friends and helpers to help him in his mission. And what to speak of me? I'm just an ordinary human being, Prabhupada says. So I need your help. I have just received a very favorable report from Mandali Bhadra. He's a very nice boy. Work cooperatively with him and let us all serve Krishna. Very soon I shall see you all and give further instructions. Again, he mentions cooperation twice. Cooperation with him in the mission of Lord Chaitanya and cooperation with his god brothers. Here's one, it was 1974. I omitted the names in this, but it was some dissension between devotees. The Prabhupada said, this kind of criticism and counter-criticism is not good. Those who are advanced devotees try to see only the good that other devotees are doing. Just as bees are attracted to honey, while flies are attracted to the sores. Let us try to work cooperatively. Otherwise, the fighting spirit will ruin our great movement. Very strong statements, very instructive to us to remember that. And I, because I sort of knew a little bit about what they're fighting about, one of the parties, and most of us would clearly see that they were in the wrong, but Prabhupada didn't say that. Now, maybe he talked to them privately and straightened them out or something, but he just said, try to work cooperatively. Don't ruin our movement. And he understood that dissension fighting would ruin the movement. And we can see that whenever devotees are not getting along, do things flourish? No. If devotees are fighting, if devotees are not getting along, it's not like the movement goes on, everybody just goes out and continues. No, it's like it stifles everything. It causes so many difficulties. So we know that our success will arise from a cooperative spirit of service to Krishna and Guru. This reminded me of a verse, and I wanted to find it because it's very, very pretty well known, I would say, verse and purport. Srila Prabhupada talks real specifically about this idea of cooperation. I think it's worth reading. This is in the Bhagavatam 438, which is the sons of King Parchanibharashat, who were known as the Prachetas. And they were, how many were there? 10,000 of them? 10,000. But, and they also did austerity for like 10,000 years, you know. And finally, Lord Vishnu appeared before them because of their great austerities. And it's interesting. This is like practically the first thing he said to them. This is 438. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear sons of the king, I'm very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. He didn't say thank you so much for your austerity and sacrifice. He said thank you for your friendly relationships among you. Isn't that interesting? All of you engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I'm so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me. Very nice. Srila Prabhupada says, since the sons of King Prachanibharasha were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Prachanibharasha was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or rendering service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they all have different interests. In the United Nations, for instance, all the nations have their particular national ambitions, and consequently, they cannot be united. And you see that all the time with the United Nations. You know, there'll be one country holds out because, you know, their interest and won't let things go through like that. This unity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in the society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to having different opinions and leaning toward material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. Interesting. There's only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there's some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstances. Of course, I think the key word here is one who's actually engaged, one who is really just trying to serve Krishna without some personal agenda. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benedictions to his devotees, as indicated in this verse. We can see the Lord is immediately prepared to award all benedictions to the sons of King Vrajavarsha. Now, the next following verse, verse 9, doesn't have any purport, but just to read it, it says, the Lord continued, those who remember you every evening of every day will become friendly with their brothers and with all other living entities. So that's really one of our goals, not only to serve Krishna, but also to have friendly relationships with the devotees who Krishna is saying, all of our brothers, all living entities, brothers, sisters. I thought it was interesting, this purport, that Prabhupada said that disagreements about service may be transcendental. Now, when we talk about disagreements in service, I would say that's quite different from personal attacks, criticisms, offenses, you know, against other devotees. And we certainly want to refrain from this. In fact, our acharyas tell us in the scriptures we shouldn't even hear criticisms of devotees. It's not healthy. Sometimes it's said the best thing, if someone starts to criticize a devotee, best thing is just to walk away. Or say, I'm sorry, I have something else to do. Like that prophet said, I remember to say, I'm sorry, I'm very busy right now. Don't even listen to it. You know? Now, does this mean we disregard any bad behavior? Anything that's okay that devotees do? No, of course not. But we can still refrain from unneeded criticism. Even if things need to be corrected, they need to be changed, or somebody needs to be, let's say his behavior is not ideal and maybe needs some correction or needs to be preached to or instructed, that's fine. But it can still be done in a loving way, in a way that is not with undue criticism, and also not necessarily public criticism. In a position of management, sometimes this is very difficult. Those of us who have been in those positions know that we often have to deal with many different behaviors which are problematic among devotees. You know, and if you don't, then everybody gets on your case and says, why aren't you dealing with this? Why aren't you taking care? In other words, you have to do something sometimes about certain circumstances. One thing I would always teach in different classes about communication and leadership is that the first thing we want to do is address the behavior or the action, not the person. Everybody knows what that means? In other words, you may be doing something that isn't the right thing to do, but it doesn't mean that I attack your personality, your character, right? Who you are, your being, no. Because who is that person? It's a devotee, and ultimately, you know, a pure soul in relationship with God, with Krishna. You know, so we want to always remember that, even if there is some action that must be changed like that. And sometimes that's difficult to do. It can be a challenge. You know, but it's really important that if we're in any position of any kind of leadership or management or authority, that we respect the person. We can always retain that integrity of the person, even if there has to be some correction. The best example I ever saw of this was, some years ago, I happened to be the chairman of the GBC that year, and there was one other GBC members who was making some really bad management mistakes. They weren't spiritual, you know, they were managerial, really. And so we talked about it, some of us, we had a committee or something, and I had to talk to him, and Radhana Swami was a friend of his, so he said, I'll help talk with him too. I said, oh, great, thank you. You know, because, you know, this other person is a GBC, he's a sannyasi, he's a guru, you know, it's like, you know, you have to offer a little respect as well. And so it was really interesting to see how Radhana Swami spoke with him, because he was strong and loving at the same time. It was quite interesting. Archie, he sat down, sitting right across from him. He held his hands in a very sweet way, in a very loving way, and a very loving voice said, Maharaj, you're a wonderful devotee. You preach so nicely. You do all of these things. That's what you need to do. Just be a sadhu. Just take care of your disciples. Just preach. And do not get into management. You may should never touch money again. He tells him, just he looks right at him and says, do you understand? You may not touch money. And yes, Maharaj. You know, and they're good friends. But you know, in other words, to speak so strong. I mean, that would have been hard for me if I spoke that directly, you know, to someone who's my spiritual superior, really, you know, even though I was in a management position. But he was able to do that, with, you know, and yet you could just, you could feel the love at the same time as that he was intent. He meant it, you know. So, and I see that. I've had differences of agreements, philosophical agreements with other sannyasis or other GBCs or members, and it doesn't really affect our relationships. And these people I have strong disagreements with are good friends. You know, because I think that's what Prabhupada's talking about here. There can be disagreements about service. You know, different ways of philosophically approaching something, or sometimes it's a matter of priorities. Some of them think, well, I think prasadam distribution is the most important thing, and this is what we should do, and this and this is, well, I think we should do this, or do, you know, kirtan, or whatever. You know, simple solution. You do what, you know, you do what enthuses you, and you do what enthuses you, and they're both good. You know, you don't fight over it, you know. So you try to encourage everybody that way. But I just want to emphasize, philosophical differences are not the same as personal attacks. And that's one reason that I really dislike social media. I think I'm the last person in America who doesn't use Facebook. There might be one or two of you, but, and I probably should. I probably should learn how, in the spirit of Yukta Vairagya, to use it effectively in Krishna service, but, you know, I'm kind of a Luddite. You remember the Luddites in Great Britain? Oh, this is a little history lesson here. In the 1800s, England was at the forefront of the Industrial Revolution, and everything was becoming industrialized, and steam power and everything, and so all the cotton and wool, it was all becoming big business almost, you know, like in the 1800s. Everything was industrialized, all the machines were coming in, and what that did was all the little individual craftspeople were put out of work, or they had to just go work in a factory and just do their little part on the machine rather than, you know, in the skilled craft they had done. So some of them became very angry about this. These were the ones called Luddites. And they actually went in and at night and stuff, and they'd take, you know, they would smash the machinery and attacks. Anyway, they came down on them real hard, because you can imagine the factory owners had all the money and power, wealth, control. So these people got smashed pretty much. But in today's terminology, Luddites are people who are generally not opposed to technology, but the inappropriate usage. And that's how I feel. I mean, I love to use computers in so many ways, like looking up on the database for verses and things like that. You know, but the social media can also be very powerful. Some of our Krishna conscious websites get thousands, if not millions, you know, of people visiting them, and they do tremendous preaching work. But I think what becomes inappropriate is when we see these attacks, and often spurious attacks, ones with no grounding, no truth to them, really. Just people throw out anything. It's like there's no respect given, there's no filtering, you know, just kind of whatever I want to blurt out, put it out there on Facebook, you know, and it's fine. But actually, it's not fine. Often it's with little basis, it's simply someone's opinion or dislike. And we have to think, would this please Srila Prabhupada? Would this be the spirit of cooperation that Srila Prabhupada talked about over and over again? I don't think so. So I think we have to be really conscious of that, to try to follow what Srila Prabhupada is telling us about cooperation with one another. We need to learn these things. And, you know, devotees are leaving us every day, as we all have seen and noticed lately. So we need to learn to value the association of devotees. Not take it so, this person, you know, he said something or did something or didn't do something that I didn't quite approve of, so I'll just blast away at them. No, these are, believe it or not, you are all great devotees. Myself, not so much so, but you all are, you know, and we need to value that. We need to appreciate one another and appreciate all the devotees out there, because how many are there when you think about it? in percentages. What percentage of the United States are Hare Krishna devotees? Tiny, you know, three out of 330 million people, whatever, tiny amount, so very special. So we need that association, and particularly of advanced devotees. And of course, Srila Prabhupada, being the most advanced devotee, gave us the greatest association, but all devotees give us important association. Verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 118:13, the value of a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord cannot be compared even to the attainment of the heavenly planets, liberation from matter, and what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which is for those who are meant for death. In other words, everything else we have will end at a certain time. It'll all be taken away from us. But what remains is the spiritual benediction that has come from the great devotee. Has propelled us, really, not just kind of pulled us into Krishna consciousness, pushed us, propelled us, you know. I mean, Srila Prabhupada dragged us practically into becoming devotees. We didn't even know exactly what it was, but we came. And, you know, due to his great association, and basically, it was we understood his purity. That Prabhupada was not here to cheat us. He was not here to get anything from himself. He was doing this for us out of love. And we could see that that love had a source. That love is coming from his love of Krishna. And that loving relationship which comes through. The spiritual master is called a transparent via media, which means Krishna's love, Krishna's knowledge, everything, Krishna's understanding comes through them transparently without any filters. Those filters are the three modes of nature for most of us. But for the pure devotee, they're coming through purely. So Prabhupada gave us Krishna, purely. So, of course, it's not that we all become instantly pure by the association of pure devotee, but at least the process begins. Jiva Goswami talks about that a little bit in Bhakti Sandarbha, verse 11. Maharaj Jiva Goswami says, generally, taste develops by association with great devotees. By serving great devotees, taste for the Lord's topics develop. Meeting those devotees, one develops faith in worshiping the Lord, then desire to hear. And from that hearing, taste develops. Hearing from great devotees has immediate effect. So what does it mean when we say taste? You know, we use that word a lot, don't we? We get a taste or a spiritual taste. Of course, ruchi is the technical word for taste, which is one of the stages after nishtha in devotional service. But sometimes we use it a little bit, I think, more loosely than that. Not just that it's this very firmly fixed stage. Anybody have ideas?
Inner driving force. Inner driving force.
An inner driving force.
Okay,
well that's kind of like faith too, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but faith also we are contemplating the Lord. Taste is like impression.
Taste is an impression. Okay, any other idea? What does taste mean to you? What's that?
Attraction.
Yeah. Krishna is the all attractive, right? Yeah, there's an attraction. That's part of the taste, that you feel that attraction. And you feel some, what else do you feel? Happiness? Bliss? Ananda, a little bit, you know? That's all there. That's one of our qualities. That's one of Krishna's qualities, one of our qualities, is ananda, bliss. There's some blissfulness. You know, it's not like they were completely situated 100% in prema, but it's a preliminary stage. Preliminary stage to full, you know, total, complete Krishna consciousness as we start getting these tastes. And there's a whole science of it, and there's different, you know, there's preliminary tastes, and some that are real, some that aren't so much, some that are permanent, some that aren't, but that's not where I'm going with this class. So let's just say, you know, that taste just starts to develop, and it comes from association with the devotees. So there's two results of hearing the Vedic scriptures from a pure devotee. One, we become detached from material things, we give up that attraction, and we become attached or attracted to Krishna. Okay? So again, Prabhupada said, the best policy, therefore, is to act for the sake of the Lord. How do we act for the sake of the Lord? Well, this is a philosophical question. And it begins with understanding the Chinta Beta Beta Tattva. And how much time do I have? Krishna is non-different. His non-different form, his original sarup. We can't say Krishna is not different from his form because Krishna is his form. It's one and the same. And it's hard to say that right, isn't it, grammatically? I guess we could say Krishna is non-different from his original sarup. That's his form is himself. And integral to that is his spiritual energy called Chit Shakti or Sarup Shakti. And everything in existence manifests from his Sarup Shakti. The unlimited energies emanate from the energetic source, right? From the Svetashvatara Upanishad says the Supreme Lord has multipotencies, but acts so perfectly that all consciousness, strength, and activity are being directed solely by his will. So the Vaishnava understanding is there's nothing in creation that's different from Krishna. We've come across that several times here in our recent readings in the Bhagavatam. And of course, you probably remember from several months ago, when we were in the Chatur Shlokis, that nothing is different from the Lord. Anyone remember that verse? Right? And the translation is?
Anything that not connected to Krishna.
Yeah, basically that's what it's saying. Yeah, a little more than that. But yeah, it's basically saying anything that is not connected to me is illusionary. It's not real. If you think something is different from me, it's not. It's not real. Because how can it be? How can anything be different than Krishna? Krishna is the source of everything. His energies are expanding to create, you know, the entire spiritual world. And over in one quarter of his energy, over in this little dark corner, Prabhupada says, is the Mahatattva, the material energy, Mahatattva. The material worlds are here also. All of this is coming from him. Nothing's separate from him. So, we uphold a philosophy called Paranamavada, which is the theory of transformation. Sankaracharya, my impersonal say, have a philosophy called Vivartavada, which means theory of illusion. Anything you think is different is false. It's all illusion of mind. Everything is Brahman. Very simplistic, doesn't make a lot of sense. We could go on and on about that. But the theory of transformation explains everything perfectly. God creates the world through his energies, his potencies. He's not transformed. Krishna remains one, the one complete whole. But through his energies transform into all the varieties, both material and spiritual, that we see. So the Vaishnava understanding is Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, which is similar but more developed by Lord Chaitanya. That God is inconceivably one with everything, yet remains separate, the unchanged Supreme Lord. Now, I think discussing oneness with God is interesting because we often talk about difference. I think we talk more about the difference than the oneness, don't we often? And that's because of, you know, refutation of Mayavad philosophy. Prabhupada had to talk a lot about that because, oh, we're all one. This is just so pervading that it has to be refuted. But we also understand, well, how are we one as well as how are we different? Obviously, we're the same spiritual nature, the same composition. We're all both Satchitananda, Krishna Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. But besides that, we are one in quality nature, and Prabhupada gives so many examples like the ocean and the drop of water, same composition, although one is very large, one is very small. We have a large fire, and the sparks of the fire coming out, we are like those small sparks. You know, but we are Tatishta Shakti. We are small, we are separated, and we are subject to be covered by illusion, is what Tatishta means. So, obviously there's a difference, but one of the ways that we're the same, or can be or should be, is in our intent, that we should be one in purpose and will with the Lord. What is Krishna's desire? That should be our desire. And much of the time it is. Sometimes it isn't, you know, and that's where we're at. That's what sadhana bhakti is about, that process of taking ourselves from a very beginning neophyte stage to more and more and more becoming under the desire and the will of Krishna, which is often manifested through the spiritual master, of course. And so if we think that our If we're apart from him, that's illusion. We think that our will is different than his, that's illusion. And if we think that our interest is different, our self-interest is different, that's illusion. We need to know what is our real self-interest. Bhagavatam 5:6:19 says, those who unnecessarily engage in bodily conceptions and create an atmosphere of materialism are ignorant of their real self-interest. And Prabhupada says in the verse, they need to know, Natevadu Svarta Gatim Mibushnu. The goal of life, or real self-interest, is service to Vishnu, Krishna. Right? So that's the real self-interest. In the natural state in the spiritual world, the jiva does not have material senses, material mind, anything like that. Prabhupada says, in his pure uncontaminated state of original life, the living entity has no such needs. They're artificial. Spiritual senses do not have independent motive outside of Krishna. They don't work and exist separately from Krishna. And not only that, but it's not like, okay, the living entities, the jivas, are some robots, you know, that totally can't have no separate interest or some no control, no volition. They do. The jiva always has a little small volition. It always has some independence, right? Some free will. But the greatest enjoyment and reality of the jiva is when our senses are put into the service of the senses of Krishna. That's when the jiva feels happy, feels content, feels rightly situated. We are as we should be in relationship with Krishna. But we're the servant, Krishna's a master. There's no getting around it. And when we accept that, we're happy. It's wonderful. It's, you know, it's not something to... Okay, so devotional service is the real self-interest of the Atma. And on a very deep level, the super soul, or Krishna, is even more dear to the soul than ourselves. Now, there's a couple places to talk about that. It's a little hard to take some study. And Krishna says to the wives of the Brahmins, 10:23-26, certainly expert personalities who can see their own true interest render unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service directly unto me, for I am the most dear to the soul. In other words, where does the soul come, where do we come from? We come from Krishna. We would not have individual existence without the existence of Krishna. Right? Therefore, Krishna is the most dear. Krishna is the most important. So, anyway. So we need to align our interest with the interest and desire of Krishna. I'm going to have to wrap up here. What is Krishna's desire? What's his motivation? Now, it's difficult for us to understand, you know, that what is Krishna? How is God motivated? That almost seems presumptuous, doesn't it? A little bit arrogant to even ask that question. But we don't know. But we do hear from the scriptures that Krishna gave us and from our acharyas, from our guru, you know, we learn something about it so we can understand it a little bit. And we understand that Krishna, of course, is Atmarama. He's self-satisfied. So why does he do anything? Because Krishna wants to always expand prema. His motivation, according to our acharyas, is to experience his joy of Ladini Shakti, to expand love, to expand prema, and to be involved and engaged in loving relationships. Now, Jiva Goswami in the Priti Sandarbha discusses this quite a bit, beginning about verse 68. He says, the function of all types of intense bliss belonging to the Ladini Shakti is placed in the devotees and called Priti for the Lord. Because of this, the Lord partakes of the intense Priti which is in the devotees. In other words, because we are part and parcel of Krishna and we have some of his qualities and we have that Ladini Shakti, Priti basically means attraction, love, bhakti, love, you know, prema. I don't know, it's a little hard to, I can't define it real well. But basically it means that attraction we have between Krishna and other entities. And then he quotes a verse from 9.4.64. O Brahman, without the devotees who take shelter of only me, I do not desire to enjoy my own bliss from his sarup or from my six great qualities, from his sarup shakti. In other words, I'm just going to summarize this. Jiva Goswami, this is a little technical, explains that there's two aspects of Krishna's enjoyment or bliss. One from his Swarup, that's like the Atmarama aspect, in other words, from within himself, and the other is through his Shaktis. Now, of course, who's his greatest Shakti? Radharani, the Swadini Shakti, right? So his greatest enjoyment, of course, is with Radharani. But we are also Shakti, we're Tatashta Shakti. We're another Shakti of Krishna. So he also enjoys blissful relationships with his loving relationship with all of us. And it says, Jiva Goswami says, because of this, the Lord partakes of the intense preeti which is in the devotees. The Lord and the devotees become mutually absorbed in that happiness. Okay? Now, the problem is, many of those Tatashta Shakti Jivas, because they are Tatashti, become covered, are not engaged in his loving service. And that pains Krishna. The material world over here we're in, is filled with rebellious souls and illusion, mostly rejecting Krishna. There are those who have some sense of religion and want to try to love God the best they can understand, but so many are not. But out of Krishna's love and his compassion, he wants to bring them back. He wants them all to be in a loving relationship with himself. I was thinking about that. It's almost hard to imagine. How many billion living entities do you think there are? Trillions, quadrillions, quintillions? I mean, I don't know if we could even count them. You know, I don't know if there's a number large enough in our normal numerical system. I mean, just think about on this planet how many living entities are there. Then think about all the universes and everything. Krishna has the capacity to engage in relationship with every single one of us. Now that just is, to me, is like something that's totally beyond my material mind and intellect to even comprehend. But we know it's true. And how do we know it's true? Well, it's in the scriptures. It's in, our acharyas tell us, our guru tells us. But it's also something I think we can experience a little bit. If you've ever experienced any kind of relationship with Krishna, anything, you felt a little something, a little this, like you had some relationship with Krishna, you're praying to Krishna, you tell the reciprocate, whatever it is, how in the world could he be relating with you, with me, when there's 50 billion other people right here to, you know, but every one of them will say the same thing. Well, those who are devotees, those who have some spiritual consciousness. So in other words, we have this experience that somehow or another there seems to be a personal relationship with every one of us. And Krishna arranges things for us. And Krishna, you know, Krishna is there, especially with his devotees, protecting us and helping us and giving us his divine love. And that's very, very important. Now, so what's he going to do about all these people out here in the material world who are not involved in this wonderful, loving relationship with him? He comes as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah? And Krishna Prema Pradayate, he gives freely, Krishna Prema. He gives his greatest love, his deepest love, the deepest philosophy freely to the people of Kali Yuga, undeserved as we are. Well, some of you, I think, have some qualification, but I personally can attest to the fact that I think I had almost no qualification. And all I can do is say, somehow or another, I was able to accept a little bit of Srila Prabhupada's mercy, and I'm here today, only for that reason. So Lord Chaitanya, now going back to our theme here, of being aligned with Krishna. What is Prabhupada in the purport again? I lost it. Anybody remember? What did he say? What was the last line? How bad our memories are. Okay, let's look at that again. Okay. The best policy, therefore, is to act for the sake of the Lord. That will bring about desired harmony. Acting for the sake of the Lord. So that's what we want to do. We want to act for the sake of the Lord, and therefore we want to act to help Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to fulfill his desires, and to fulfill the desires of Srila Prabhupada, all the past acharyas, and our own gurus. I'll just finish with Lord Chaitanya. I think this is, what am I reading here? I think it's Adi 9, isn't it? I'm the only gardener. I don't have it marked. I think it's Adi chapter 9. I am the only gardener. This is Lord Chaitanya. How many places can I go? How many fruits can I pick and distribute? I would certainly be a very laborious task to pick the fruits and distribute them alone. And still I suspect that some would receive them and others would not. Therefore, and this is how we can align ourselves with the will of the Lord, I order every man within this universe and woman to accept this Krishna consciousness movement and distribute it everywhere. I'm the only gardener. If I don't distribute these fruits, what shall I do with them? How many fruits can I alone eat? By the transcendental desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, water has been sprinkled all over the tree, and there are innumerable fruits of love of Godhead. Anyway, he ends with saying, it is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activity for the benefit of others. It is life, wealth, intelligence, and words. By his work, thoughts, and words, an intelligent man must perform actions which will be beneficial for all living entities in this life and next. Yeah. That is the Lord's desire, to give the highest benefit, Krishna Prana, to all living entities in this universe. And we have a little part in that, perhaps. We can align our will with the will of the Lord and try to fulfill his purposes to the degree that is possible. Okay, I've gone a little over time. Any quick questions or thoughts?
How is it to be understood that you see that a Vaishnava can perform the most abominable act and should be regarded as falseness?
I missed a lot of it. My hearing's bad.
How is it that even if a devotee performs a most abominable act, he is considered faultless?
Well, that requires a little bit of context. In other words, when you read the different purports of Acharyas, you find that they're generally thinking about, they're usually talking about someone who may have had a fall down, you know, from the highest standard. They're not talking, when they say Brahma, they're not talking about killing Brahmins, child abuse, things like that. They're talking about, you know, some fall down or some problem that everybody had. In other words, he's still considered saintly. In other words, he's rightly situated. In the next verse, of course, says he quickly becomes righteous, right? In other words, comes back to the standard, not remains fallen, comes back to the standard quickly. And probably it says in the purport, this is not an excuse for deliberately, you know, flouting the rules or deliberately doing sinful activities, material activities. You know, I know in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura's purport on that is even stronger about, you know, that this is not meant to be a, you know, license for sense gratification. In other words, what it's meant to be is kind of back to what we were saying. A devotee has some difficulty, has some problem. We don't necessarily, you know, malign him, you know, cast them out, throw stones at them. We try to help them come back properly, quickly become righteous and attain lasting peace, as the next verse says. 31. It's okay?
Thank you. So is this verse indirectly talking about how although demigods, the controlling demigods, they have some power of control, but ultimately they need like Krishna's sanction? Is that sort of one idea of this?
Oops. Yeah. In other words, that's what they're saying. You put us in position, but it's not really all quite together yet. The entire creation hasn't manifested. We can't do it without you. In other words, they're saying, you know, we understand our limited position, although we have, by probably other people's estimations, great power. And then it requires for Krishna then to enter into, not directly, but through his agencies, enter into the material universes, and that's all spelled out throughout the next chapter of how the creation will continue, and then the demigods are able to be in their place and run it properly, and that's what they're doing. They're recognizing the position of Krishna. These very nice prayers they offer, you know, but it's up to him. Thank you. Anything else? Mm-hmm. Maharaj, did you have something?
I'm still a little bit stuck on or focused on this idea of taste, which
taste.
Is so important. And the standard examples that we hear is that we have to make sure we're not merely licking the outside of the bottle of honey. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure we're actually opening the bottle. The art, there's one lecture with Prabhupada about the art of how to open the bottle. Who will help us with that? And of course, the other example, there are probably various examples, but the other example that we are presented is we have to get cured of our jaundiced condition. Mm. Because then even something like sugar candy is naturally sweet, but we're tasting...
It tastes bitter, but yet bitter. It cures you too.
I remember about 1972 or something like that, I was coming as a guest. Everyone was delighted to see these cartoons about Prahlad, young Prahlad, and it seemed like it was just kid stuff. And I was thinking, I'm a grown man, what, I'm sitting here, and everyone else was delighted by it. And I was, I felt I was too mature to I'm not a kid, but everyone else seemed to like it. So that was due to my jaundice.
Well, while you have the mic, could you answer this? How do you feel, or could you tell us anything about how do we get that taste? How do we try to understand or appreciate Ruchi?
I can give another personal anecdote. A little later on, after I, Mother Sumati in Boston, I had this service of sweeping and the stairs, and lots of stairs in the Boston Temple, this oak townhouse venue. And she comes in and she says, Dr. Lan, you're cleaning your heart. I said, no, I'm just sweeping the stairs. I didn't quite get it. And then later on, I was kind of like challenging. I was recognized with various people. It was very challenging, and I was kind of like trying to get on the devotee's case. And I told him, I don't understand how you can say this, and then but whatever it was, and then the devotees very calmly and kindly. They didn't get bent out of shape. They just said, Dr. Lan, you can understand because you're envious or something like that. and instead of becoming angry at it, it was a golden moment where I actually, I may not be getting the word right, maybe something similar to envious, but whatever it was, I was saying, yeah, that's right. I don't understand because I'm challenging too much. Mm-hmm. And that was a real golden moment. It wasn't that long after that I moved into the temple. So you can help me connect this again.
Well, we're talking about taste and ruchi. So. You gave us some good examples, I think, of things that prevent us from taste, or getting that, talking about, challenging attitude and things like that, So I assume once there was some surrendering in the heart, then some taste, more taste came about. Okay.
I was contemplating while you were expressing your realization about the taste. Some of the bhaktas, they get up at 3 o'clock, they chant and all this. So I was thinking like, where's the taste here for them? They just come fresh from the outside world. They're not born in the movement or anything. I remember Ramanujacharya says, when everybody is sick in a village, some people took shelter of a doctor and they're taking the medicine. Those who are taken shelter of doctor and taking the medicine, they are not same category as the rest of the village.
Mm.
Even though externally it looks like all are suffering. Because they can start thinking, I have a doctor, I'm taking the medicine, I'm getting better, I'm getting better. They actually, there is a happiness in that.
Oh, yeah.
So austerity is a sign of happiness. And I see them, all of the boys, and within myself too. We are happy in that purification. It is not like sense gratification, eating ice cream in my tongue, you know, experiencing.
It's in
there
the heart.
Is a taste.
It's in the heart.
So that's one taste. Another taste is also our decision. We make decision. I want to progress.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's kind of a, I guess you call it an existential happiness, which means, you know, I mean, in other words, it's not like you said, like, oh, this ice cream tastes good, happiness. But, you know, it's like I feel well situated. I feel better about where I'm at, who I am, what I understand about life, right? That kind of thing. I mean, I remember before becoming a devotee, it's like it was all just confusing. What's the purpose? And you know, there's a certain amount of, I would say it's almost like an ongoing slight anxiety in many people's life, particularly people who are a little bit intelligent or actually wondering and asking questions and what's the purpose of life, you know. And then when one becomes a devotee, when one surrenders, when one accepts the philosophy, it's like that's resolved. It doesn't mean that you understand it all, that you're always happy, but, you know, that underlying anxiety about what's the purpose, is that's taken care of. Because now we know. It's like you say, you've made a decision, and now you're moving forward. You're taking the medicine. You're getting well. You're moving, you know, and taste will be there. There will be taste. There will be some ecstatic kirtan. There will be some time when you just really get into your japa. You read something that just, that really inspires me, that taste will be there. You have faith in that. I mean, all the older devotees will tell you that. There will be taste. This one looks like you have some taste. Smiling. Anyone else here? Or you want
to? I also wanted to appreciate your explaining to me about GBC's decision is a personalism decision, not impersonalism. It's a very big deal. Because you gave the example of Radhanath Maharaj, mentoring, or you can say friendly counseling to his brother for something unresolved to a resolved, but in a very personal manner, in a sense that it was embraced by each other in a good conclusion.
Yeah.
But GBC could have done, okay, that's it, you cannot do like this, do like this.
And it made them
it's
resented.
Like impersonalism to me.
Yeah. And that's what you find. I mean, there's some expression, I can't remember what it is, but something about one may give in, doesn't mean they agree, you know, I mean, it's one of those nice little rhyming slogans, I can't remember what it is. But anyway, in other words, people will tend to listen to us if they sense a relationship, the sense that we care. There is some love, some kind, something there. In other words, it's a little bit from our heart. I mean, remember years ago, I had to fire some devotee who was in my department, the BBT, because he did something bad, broke on the principles. And, but, you know, he's my friend, and I talked and said, that's sorry, it's the way it is, and he's still one of my best friends. You know, in other words, so much of it has to do with how we treat people, and especially devotees. You know, if Krishna's the center, if there's love, if there's relationship, things can go on. Like Prabhupada said, there can be disagreement, but that can be transcendental, not just material.
Thank you.
Okay.
I just talked about that to Nanda this morning. We were talking about in the early days how we did so much austerity, like no water, no eat, and so on. But everybody says that was the best time of our life. So this is taste.
Yeah. It also helped to be 19 or 21 years old, too. It was all arranged nicely by Krishna. Yeah. No, but it's true. In other words, basically, it's not material happiness which gives us that taste or gives us that satisfaction. You know, it's the satisfaction of devotional service, of bhakti. Okay, we should end. Thank you all so much. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Thanks, Prabhupada.